This podcast contains the personal stories, opinions, and experiences of its speakers rather than those of Breast Cancer Now. Welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast, providing support and information to anyone affected by breast cancer. I'm Laura Price, and I'm the host of the Breast Cancer Now podcast. I'm a food writer and author, and I live with secondary breast cancer. Today, we are talking to a mother and daughter who were diagnosed with breast cancer just weeks apart. Fern checked her breasts after her mum, Jan, was told she had cancer, and Fern subsequently found out she had cancer too. They've been going through treatment together since 2022, and they are now proudly supporting Asda's Tickle Pink Mother's Day campaign, which supports Breast Cancer Now and Copperfield. We're bringing you this episode for Mother's Day, and we're going to be talking about what it's like to be going through a diagnosis and treatment with a close family member, and how that experience can sometimes make you stronger. Fern and Jan, welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast.
Hi. So nice to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to meet you both. So I'd love to start by getting to know you and finding out how you both came to be diagnosed with cancer. So Jan, I'd like to start with you. Can you tell us how you were diagnosed?
Yes. So my diagnosis started, well, in my mind, a year before, because I had a tiny lump and some thickening. I went to the GP, who sent me to the 2-week clinic. And that was all checked, and no, it was absolutely fine. It was just normal ageing. So I went away happy, carried on with my life. And then several months later, I'm not sure how many, 6, 7, the lump started to get bigger. And I just thought, no, it's just a cyst that told me that. And so I just sat on it, really complacent. And just kind of thought, oh, I need to go to the GP and get that drained. You know, it's getting a bit of a pain. It's quite big, really. But you know what it's like? Life takes over and you're too busy. And I knew it was only a cyst and I've been told that it was fine. And it was, but then it did really start to get quite big and quite hard. And I thought, I really should go and get that drained. In the back of my mind, I think there was a bit of denial going on because it clearly wasn't a cyst. So I did finally go back to the GP, who sent me straight away back to the breast clinic. And although when I had the ultrasound, the look on the doctor's face kind of gave it away when he looked at the floor when I said, so do you think it's cancer? When he said, that's definitely not a cyst. But he wouldn't tell me whether he thought it was cancer or not. But the lack of eye contact kind of gave it away. But then I had a three and a half week wait until the biopsies came back, by the end of which I did know it was, because I'd been chasing up the result and rang the hospital, and the receptionist said, oh, they're just waiting for the HER2 result. So that's how I found out.
Did you know what HER2 was?
Well, I went online and looked up HER2.
Okay.
And that did confirm what I'd kind of really in my gut knew at that point.
And how did it feel finding out that it was cancer after such a long time of firstly being told that it wasn't and then being just made to wait?
Well, it was really scary because obviously I was really, really annoyed with myself. I'd sat on it for so long. And obviously I'd thought, if this has been there for a year, how bad is this? You know, so I was kind of expecting the worst. And then, so how could, well, they told me there was nothing wrong. And but then, you know, I should have been more on it, because I'm sure they probably told me as well that if anything changed to go back, but you don't hear everything, do you? And life is always, it takes precedence, and, you know, you've got work to do and there's other things going on, and you just push that one to the back, to the, you know, the background, and that's really was not a good thing to do.
And what was the situation? Were you told that you could have treatment there and then?
Yes, I was. They did straight away book me in for a CAT scan, because there was a possibility that it had been there longer than, you know, the few weeks when it started to get bigger. That came back clear, which was a huge relief. And I was booked in for, I think it was about 3 weeks until I had chemo and, you know, after seeing an oncologist. So the treatment did get started really, really quickly. But I felt quite on top of it. I didn't really feel as if it overwhelmed me. And I did say, I would like you to go back and re-examine what was looked at last year, because if it was there, then, you know, someone needs to know that something was missed, which they did. And apparently when they re-examined all of the scans and the imaging, there wasn't anything cancerous there at that point, but it clearly had changed in the course of, you know, those 5-6 months, whatever it was.
Okay, well, we'll come back to your the treatment and everything that you had afterwards in a little while. But first I wanted to ask Fern, we'll also talk about your own diagnosis, but how did you feel, first of all, when you found out your mum had cancer?
Well, stupidly, I believed all those common misconceptions about what a breast cancer diagnosis means. So you think the best thing to do is to be positive and try and share the positivity and encourage them to be strong and, you know, you've got this and all those stereotypical sayings that I thought I was being such an amazing support. I was really proud of myself for being so supportive. But it was only when I got my diagnosis that I realised, actually, it's not about giving all that toxic positivity. It's just about listening and understanding to their experience, because everyone's is so different.
And even though you were saying all these things, you've got this and whatnot, what did you feel underneath? Were you...
I think because of the things that you see, the really misleading stuff online, stuff in the news, I think I genuinely believed it. I think I genuinely believed, oh, it's only breast cancer. I can't believe I'm even saying that now. But honestly, that's how I felt. This makes me cringe even saying it, but at least you're going to get a boob job. Can't believe it. Honestly, I'm so sorry to say that out loud, but that's honestly what I believed. I believed it's okay. You know, it's a good one. All those classic misconceptions about what it means and how serious it is, didn't really have a clue. I mean, obviously I was scared because it's my mum, and you know, you don't want anything to happen to your mum, or you know, go through a horrible experience anyway, let alone something like cancer treatment. But I genuinely thought I was doing a good job of supporting them. I really did.
And when you said it's a good one, did you mean it, breast cancer is one of the good cancers if you were to get a cancer?
So I thought, you know, it's easily treatable. You know, all those things that you hear, oh, there's so much they can do these days. I could just reel off hundreds of those phrases that people just come out with thinking that it's supportive. And I did the exact same thing.
So how long was it until you got your own diagnosis, and how did you find that diagnosis?
So mum's kind of spurred me on to check myself. I did always sporadically have a little check in the shower, but never felt anything. And then I laid down, and I think I took it really seriously because obviously mum had just been diagnosed, and I noticed that there was a difference, and it felt completely different to mum's. So mum's was like a rock. Mine was more like a thickened area. And I hope no one's eaten any cauliflower bang bang, but it felt a bit like a bit of cooked cauliflower.
Okay.
That sort of like different, slightly different shape, but you had to really look for it. So because mum was just diagnosed, I thought this has got to be psychological. I know there's a difference. It was a real 50-50. I feel there's something there, but it can't be the same time as mum. It's got to be in my head. It's got to be some kind of worry showing itself as like health anxiety or something like that. So I kept it a little bit, played it on the down low a little bit with mum. I didn't say anything until I just casually said, yeah, I just want to let you know, I found a lump of my own. I'm sure it's nothing to worry about, and I'm sure it's just because I'm worried about you. But I just wanted to let you know, sort of thing. Mm. But I'm sure it's nothing to worry about. Because the other aspect of it is that you feel like you're kind of trying to take the attention away.
Yeah.
I don't know about your diagnosis, but I've got a lump. which is obviously ridiculous, but that is an emotion that kind of came in to how I felt about it and how seriously I took the difference in my boob.
So how soon did you find out that you had cancer as well?
Well, mum had an appointment at our local breast clinic to have a clip put in before her chemo, because that was her first line of treatment, was the chemo. And I happened to have been given an appointment to have the mammogram and a check with a consultant, check out this different area at the same time. So we went up together, had a nice bit of lunch, convinced that I was just there to support mum and that they were going to... Well, actually, I wasn't convinced. I think I knew. I think I did know deep down when I felt lumps under my armpit. I think I did know, but...
I think you did. I think that nice little meal wasn't nice at all.
No, it wasn't.
Do you think you did as well, Jan? Do you think you knew as well?
I think we did. Yeah. I think I remember that every minute of that meal. It was a beautiful restaurant.
We were trying to be so...
We could barely eat.
Yeah, I know. We were trying to be so good about it. But at the same time, you just think, what are the chances of this happening at the same time that I'm going to the same place that my mum is about to start her treatment to be told I've got cancer? I just thought, this has got to be psychological. So I was really hanging on to that. And so I went, and you know what it's like. It's horrible, the biopsies. And luckily, the what's it called? The lady that does the ultrasound. Ultrasonographer, is that right?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, she was fantastic. And she, I had a bit quite a different experience to you, where she did talk me through what she saw. And I'd had a little Google online before, so I tried to sound like I knew a little bit about what I was looking at. I was like, oh, those edges don't look very differentiated, or trying to sound. I thought, if I sound like I know what I'm talking about, she might be a bit more open with me. And she was like, no, they're not. And then I saw her measuring it, and then she's measuring another area. And I knew from speaking to an amazing nurse at Breast Cancer Now, when I was looking for support, so that I could support mum in the right way, that, you know, the more biopsies they take, the more there probably is. And if it's under the arm, then it's probably lymph nodes and all that. So I knew by the amount of biopsies I was having and the size of the area of concern, whatever they call it, that it was quite large. And the consultant who had previously said, before I went in for the ultrasound, that he couldn't feel anything, sat me down and said, you've really surprised me. I can say that you need to expect cancer diagnosis, because that is what it looks like. Mm. So then obviously you have to wait for the biopsy results. But yeah, that was the beginning of, I don't even have the words to describe it, really, of trying to... It's just like a bomb's gone off, isn't it? Because it's just like everything around is white noise, and you just have to try and function the best you can.
With the way that your mum had been sort of fobbed off, I guess, did you feel grateful at all that they said you should expect a cancer diagnosis, because they were a bit more straightforward with you?
Absolutely, yeah, really grateful. And I think that mum's experience had prompted me to ask a lot more questions and be a lot more forthcoming with... Oh, how big is that? What are you measuring there? Even though it's not very nice, sort of laying there while they're doing all this, I was trying to really find the strength to just get as much information as I could while I was there and then.
Yeah, you sound like me. When I'm lying on a bed having whatever treatment, whether it's an ultrasound or a biopsy, I'm always the annoying patient asking all the questions.
Oh, no, I think, would be now.
Yeah, I think it is that thing of you if want to know. And very often, if you don't ask, you don't necessarily find out, because a lot of people don't want to know, of course.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily always offer up the information. So exactly. It is good to ask, I think.
Mm. But looking back, I can see what the doctor said. If she was trying, I think she said something like, well, it looks like it is something more serious than a cyst. And in my mind, I thought, well, even a benign growth is more serious than a cyst, isn't it? And I was thinking, well, it could just be a benign growth. Mm. I don't know why. Yeah. I think it was the denial.
Yeah, I mean, denial is a very, very natural reaction, I think, to those scary situations. It's definitely something that, and I had that as well, actually. Mm. Jan, so you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, and then you find out that your daughter has breast cancer too. How did that feel on top of your own diagnosis?
This is so hard to talk about this bit. This
is just Take your time.
The worst memory and the worst time. Because when I had my own diagnosis, And it, you always think straight away, oh, this is it. You know, you imagine your own funeral and everything. And I'm sure everyone who does, who gets any kind of cancer diagnosis. But then quite soon I thought, well, you know, I'm 58. I've got a great family. I've had a good life. Even if it does come to that, I can't really complain, you know. And thank goodness it's not the children. And that was one of the, I kind of call it the Pollyanna moments. Thank goodness it's not this. Thank goodness it's not the children or the grandchildren. And then within a few weeks for it to be Fern, it was, to be quite honest, from that point on, my own diagnosis was kind of just an incidental. Because really, your children are the most important thing in the world to you. And I mean, I was horrified or terrified that I would be too ill to look to help to support Fern, because that's what I wanted more than anything else, was to be able to look after Fern. And I hadn't even started chemo. Fern's diagnosis was the day before I had my first chemo, and I had no idea how it was going to affect me. And so I was just quite heartbroken, really, to think that I might be so ill that I couldn't even support Fern. I mean, as it happened, that's not what happened, and we were a really good support to each other. But that was my fear, that I wouldn't be able to look after her. And then, of course, you absolutely catastrophize everything, you know, looking far ahead and thinking the absolute worst, you know, if the worst happened for both of us, you know, what about the grandchildren? And say it was the worst time.
Yeah. Well, moving on to that. So Fern, you're a mum too. You have three young kids, yeah. Is that right? So how did you deal with your cancer and your mum's cancer around your kids? Did you tell them
what was happening? I knew they needed to know, because I knew that they would at the very least sense that something was going on, and I didn't want them to feel that they weren't privy or that I didn't trust them enough, or that I wanted them to know wholeheartedly that they were getting the truth and that nothing was being hidden from them.
How old are they, or how old were they?
So then? At the time, my eldest was 11, and then Isabella was 9, and then my youngest was 4. So obviously very different ages, and that meant that they can take in a lot to not very much at all. So yeah, watching them, I knew that I had to tell them soon while I was in that bomb going off numb phase, because I knew that if I didn't, I wouldn't be able to, because I knew that I'd kind of be overcome with emotion and it would get harder and harder as time went by. So as soon as I got home, I just said to them, you know what Nanny's got? I said, well, I've just been and had some tests, and Mummy's got it too, but it's just a little bit worse. And then obviously they got upset, and because they'd seen how I'd reacted to Mum's diagnosis. It's just, yeah, I mean, they've been amazing, though. They're just so strong and amazing children. I mean, I'm sure there's stuff bubbling away under there that they're going to have to deal with at some point, but, you know, they have actually been fantastic, and I feel like they should be really proud of themselves for how they've handled everything.
Do you use the word cancer with them?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's so common. It's a big part of human life, cancer, for one reason or another. No, not only food or genetics or whatever it is. And I feel like it's the same with death. I feel like we shouldn't shy away from it, because it's a big part of our lives, isn't it? And everyone's got to go through it at some point. So
absolutely, yeah. I wanted to say as well, if anyone listening is in a similar situation, there is a brilliant episode that I listened to on this podcast after my diagnosis, about explaining breast cancer to young children, with Elka Thompson. So we'll put that link in the show notes for anyone who'd like to find the episode. So Fern, you mentioned that when you were talking to your kids, you said Mummy's got the same thing as Grandma, and it's a little bit worse. So could you tell me about each of your diagnoses and what stage the cancer was at, what treatment you had to have?
Yeah, of course, yeah. So strangely, even though Mum's lump felt bigger, my lump was bigger. So I was technically 3C. But you are, what was your stage 2?
Stage 2, grade 3.
Yeah.
So mine was quite a big hard lump.
Yeah.
But it was in the breast. I didn't have anything
We are fortunately going to be doing another episode, which will come out after your episode, mm-hmm. which explains the stages and the grades and the language and the wording amazing. Around cancer. So because I, even after 12 years of experiencing cancer, I still don't fully understand the difference between grade and stage. So, but
when I was first diagnosed, I found this podcast really helpful to listen to. So I know that that will go down a storm.
Hopefully, yeah. yeah. So, but neither had spread. So neither was primary cancer.
A lot of nodes, but so far, yeah, it's just primary. So.
Yeah.
It was an awful wait, wasn't it, for your PET
Yeah, because I could feel so many lumps under my armpit after knowing how to check properly. I was convinced, and I had some back pain as well, so I was pretty resigned to the fact that I probably was looking at spread, but as luck would have it, because Mum was diagnosed, that could have been what prevented my, you know, initial diagnosis from being so
advanced. That's a really positive way of looking at it, isn't it? Yeah. That your mum,
if Mum wasn't diagnosed, I wouldn't have checked. Or at least I wouldn't have checked well enough to have taken it seriously. I mean, I was getting symptoms that I was ignoring, like arm pain, pain in my chest, like I said, back pain, completely ignoring it. Just because I thought I was where I picked up something funny or...
Yeah. And what treatment and surgery did you have to have?
So I had a mastectomy, followed a node clearance, and then chemo, 8 rounds of chemo, which... Where we live, there was quite a delay on the chemo, and Mum went in to have her pre-chemo bloods, and my wait for the chemo was so long that when I finally went in to have my pre-chemo bloods done, the HCA said to me, oh, we had a mum in here on Friday begging for her daughter to have her place for chemo. And I thought, yeah, that's my mum, cheers.
So your mum was trying to get her place given to you so that you could have your chemo first. Oh, that's mum's for you, isn't
it?
I
know.
You'd do the same for your kids, I imagine.
You would, but just the idea of your mum trying to sort of give away her spot for you.
Well, it's just like when you're waiting for this treatment, every day you just think, come and get, I want the call, I want to have the treatment.
Yeah.
You know, you're making me really emotional now.
No.
It's just that thought, isn't it, of things that your mum would do for you or things that you would do for your children. Yeah. It's really
poignant. Yeah.
Fern, I was looking through your Instagram posts. I hope you don't mind that.
That's right. Yeah.
And you said that when you finished chemotherapy, you felt like you looked in the mirror and you felt like an empty shell of a person.
Yeah.
And that is, I think it's almost the exact phrasing I used when I finished my chemo like 11 years ago. Really, really resonate with that feeling of you should be getting better and the chemotherapy is making your cancer better, but you feel like you've just been driven down, you know, drilled down with this chemotherapy spiral and you just feel empty. How has your recovery been from that and have you managed to get yourself back?
Yeah, I think a lot of people say you're never yourself again, you lose yourself. I don't necessarily agree with that because I think that although you might feel lost at the end and, you know, like we just talked about, that feeling of being a shell where, you know, the medicines and experiences and emotional overwhelm has just annihilated you, you are still in there. And I think you just build on top of that. And I think if you're lucky enough to have the right support, you can use that, you know, like there's so many amazing people like you, Laura, they're just inspirational, that you can use that to sort of make the fire to move forward a little bit. And it's all part of me anyway, that's who I was anyway, and so now I'm just really happy to be able to be back there. And there's things like I was listening to your episode with is it Naz?
Yes.
Naz, what an amazing woman.
Yes.
And the way that she explained brain fog and how just it might take us longer to get there and it might be harder work, but we can still get to the same outcome that we could have done otherwise. I really liked listening to that and holding on to that thought. Although it was a shell at the end, I feel like I'm still there and it's just added another layer of me rather than taking it away.
Yeah, absolutely. That's our episode with Dr. Nazneen Derakhshan, which is season 5, episode 2, if anyone would like to listen to that.
What an amazing woman.
Yeah.
And I would say, sometimes you hear people say it's the best thing that ever happened to people. I wouldn't go that far.
No.
But it does make you really reassess life and really value things that you took for granted before. Well, it has me.
Do you think you took each other for granted as mother and as daughter before at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
because we're quite different, really. I mean, there's a lot of areas that we do overlap on, but we are quite different people. So this has given us something that we can really empathise, I mean, really truly empathise with each other about. Mm. That has added something quite special to being a mum and daughter.
So how are you both doing now?
Really good.
Yeah. Like you said, Mum, I feel like we're coming out the other side and we're looking at things that are a bit more, you know, easy to deal with now, like hair, like, I've got one boob. Oh, well, how can I dress for that? Rather than, how long am I going to be here? And I feel like our experience has allowed us to share so much important information. Because we were both diagnosed alongside each other, we really could compare the different symptoms and how different they were. So I just want to share how important it is to look for changes in yourself, not for a specific symptom.
Yeah, and I'd really like to reiterate not to be complacent and, you know, don't just sit on things as soon as you...
Do you know, whenever you say that, I imagine you sitting on your boob.
I sort of had the same image as well, because earlier on you talked about finding a lump and then sitting on it. Well, that brings me to the next thing, which is that you've got involved with breast cancer awareness charity Copperfield as a boobette to help educate other young people about the importance of self-checking. And that's something I've been doing for a long time as well. Yeah. I'm an OG boobette. Why was it important to you to help others?
Just because we discovered how common it was. The fact that we both were diagnosed at the same time speaks volumes in how prevalent it is in people. And also how differently our symptoms presented. I just thought that was something really valuable that we could share. Mm.
And we were shocked at just how many young women are being diagnosed with it. And it just felt like you really need to go and shout this from the rooftops.
Yeah.
And you really need to encourage everyone not only to check themselves, but to talk to their daughters, you know, because that's one of my... I look back and think, why didn't I talk to Fern?
I wouldn't have listened to you anyway, Mum.
Well, no, I know that's true. I know you would have been really annoyed if I'd done that. But looking back, I think, why didn't I tell you to check?
You shouldn't beat yourself up, Mum. I think we've done amazing.
But
done pretty good, Mum.
So you just want... Yeah, I just want people to talk about it with each other and talk to their family and their friends. And...
It's hard though, isn't it? You know, how do you bring that conversation up with breast... When you've had a diagnosis, it can almost be easier to talk about because you have to.
Oh, totally.
But how do you approach telling your daughter about checking their boobs?
And other people. I mean, my dad said that he bumped into a lady friend, that's us, but someone he knows who is an older lady. What did he say? And I said, I hope you're checking your boobs. Or
he said it's a
again,
bit
it's
awkward,
hard
though.
To, you know, you want to spread the message, but in some situations it does have some social connotations that are a little bit awkward.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You've also talked, Fern, about the difficulty or the differences in checking when you have bigger boobs.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. So I found the only way I noticed a difference was by laying down and even then laying at a certain angle, then you could really see the orange peel dimpling and all the symptoms that we commonly talk about.
Mm.
But also in hindsight, I really should have taken the lumps under my armpit more seriously. I just assumed that there was I had a spot nearby that was making them, or, you know, an infection or, you know, something that was making them enlarged. But yeah, so I'd say mum's, it was right there to the point where I remember saying to my husband, I can't believe she's left it. It's so huge.
There is a list of signs and symptoms and ways to check, both on the Breast Cancer Now website and on the Copperfield website as well. So
And I was told yesterday while I was in the Copperfield headquarters that there's a quick exit button. So if you're worried about, you're worried your parents might not approve of... You're looking at a website which involves checking your chest, you can press a button which quickly gets rid of it all from your computer.
Oh,
which
right, okay.
That's something that I don't know about you, and if you do a talk, that I often get approached by children at the end that say, oh, what if I find something? My parents wouldn't like me knowing that I've checked, or, you know, which is just heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really, I mean, we just need to be educating the parents rather than finding the quick exit.
Absolutely,
which
yeah.
Which is why it's important to, you know, talk about this more as widely as possible.
Yeah.
So hopefully if someone's listening to this podcast, maybe they'll decide to share it with someone who, like their boss or
yeah.
someone who they, or their brother or something that wouldn't
yeah.
normally necessarily be, feel comfortable talking about checking boobs. So you're also both supporting Asda's Tickle Pink campaign for Mother's Day 2024. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's actually really exciting, isn't it? We were talking yesterday saying how great it is that they do this campaign so far away from October. So you have like the big rush in October of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and then the Mother's Day check, it's kind of enough time for people to have forgotten a little bit about it. And then it hopefully it will encourage another drive of people to go and get checked.
Yeah.
And the other really nice thing that I learned about the Asda campaign is that it was pushed forward by people that work at Asda. I just think that's amazing. So it's not a publicity campaign. It's genuinely staff that worked at Asda who really cared, or, and you know people have been diagnosed, and they wanted to make it a thing, which I think is so lovely.
Mm. So what are you doing for the campaign?
Well, we're not really doing that much, if I'm honest. We've got a picture and a bit of cardboard.
In the stores?
In the stores, yeah, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I do look totally different in the picture, so I'm pretty sure even if I stood next to it, you wouldn't recognise me. But
I was right in the store. I just started chemo and you just had
Because I used to have really
surgery.
Long blonde hair, and now it's come back so dark. It's like a different hair. It's really strange, yeah. But really, it was just about sharing our story, and hopefully our story will encourage people to buy some of their merch.
Is that Copperfield merch or Asda?
In Asda, they're selling a range of stuff, and I think the money goes to Breast Cancer Now and Copperfield, which I don't think there are any better charities out there.
No, true. No, there
aren't. Yeah.
Fantastic. And can you, so you've experienced the worst and you've experienced some fun parts as well together.
Yeah.
How has this experience brought you together, bonded you, or has it done the opposite? How's it been for your relationship?
I think it's actually been really beneficial for our relationship because
we understood
what it means. We could talk about certain medical professionals that have some interesting traits about their style. You know,
we do have the same oncologist,
yeah,
don't we?
Yeah. Because I think even though obviously a cancer diagnosis of any kind is horrific, there's always something to be grateful for, no matter how small.
Mm. And I think most people go through it on their own.
Yeah.
And have to go out there and find, you know, online communities and listen to podcasts.
Deal with everyone like me, like I was at the beginning. God, you got this. You used to get boobs.
Actually, you weren't that bad.
Oh, I look back and I think,
It was quite helpful, actually, you being positive. But yeah, whereas we weren't alone. I know, obviously, we had different types of breast cancer, and Fern, bless her response to chemo was horrendous compared to mine. But I did know what it was like to have quite a harsh chemo regime. I did know what it was like for your hair to fall out and your eyebrows and eyelashes.
Just knowing that they're sort of routine. The routines.
They are, but it was, as your mum, it was, I knew what you were going through, and it kind of, weirdly, kind of felt better to know that I was supporting you from a place of experience and from a place of understanding.
Absolutely, yeah.
Jan, I think I know entirely what you're saying, and I went through breast cancer when I was 29 with my mum who didn't have breast cancer, and I can't speak for her obviously, but I feel like she felt helpless because she wasn't going through, and I think I remember her saying she would happily have gone through it instead of me any day. She listens to this podcast, so hi mum.
Oh,
happy
hi,
Mother's
yeah.
Day. But yeah, I think it totally makes sense what you're saying basically about that it helped that you were going through it because it helped you to understand what Fern was going
through. Yeah, and I kind of almost felt happier that I had it as well. But in fact, I would rather we'd swapped and I had Fern's and she'd had mine.
Yeah.
That's not possible,
you just
obviously.
No one knows. No one knows how these things are going to turn out.
No, that's true.
People have the tiniest lump that comes back really quickly. You just don't know. You just don't know.
No, not at all. And you obviously can't control it and you didn't make it happen in the first place.
Exactly,
thing,
so. Yeah.
But one of the first things that a lot of people would think about when you're both diagnosed in the same family is, was it hereditary? Was it a genetic thing? So I believe you've had genetic testing to find out if you had any genetic faults.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. I mean, obviously, originally we had no idea. We didn't have any relatives who'd had breast cancer. But it was only because of my age that we could go and have the genetic testing, which again kind of helped each other out in a strange way. Mm. And we both have a faulty CHEK2 gene, which...
CHEK2? Oh, yeah. Okay. I haven't even heard of that one,
well,
I
don't exactly.
Think.
Apparently quite in different... New. Some areas, it's not new. It's been known about for a long time, but it's just the testing for it. Because it's only a moderate risk, puts you at moderate risk, a lot of areas don't even test for it. So you could have a genetic test if you're living in a certain area and you don't even know that you actually do have a faulty gene. So, yeah, I feel really lucky that we got even be tested for that.
I mean, in fact, I would not have had the test. And it does, it's nowhere near as bad as the BRCA gene, but it's still... At the top end, which is where we are, it increases your risk of having breast cancer to 1 in 3. So it's still quite a high risk.
Yeah, that's pretty high. And also when you've had breast cancer, well, you are that 1 in 3.
Well, yeah.
So.
And then your chance of getting it in the other breast is also higher.
Right.
But I wouldn't have been able to have the genetic testing. And it's only because I had the genetic testing after Ferns came back positive that I was... able to say I would like a mastectomy, whereas I was all set to have a lumpectomy, and as it happened, something had been missed. And after the mastectomy, after they looked at the tissue, lo and behold, there was quite a lot of DCIS elsewhere in the breast that would have been missed if I hadn't had that mastectomy. So
it's weird how our diagnoses have helped each other, isn't it?
Yeah, wow.
Serendipity.
So, yeah, I mean, and again, knowledge is power, right? Mm. You've found out this information that has then helped you and helped each other. And you live next door to each other, I think. How did that help you to support each other through...
Well, with the children,
it
was like, I say nice in the weirdest possible way, but yeah, it was so nice to be able to... If I was... Well, you know, Laura, if you're having a cycle, sometimes parts of it are worse than other parts. And if one of us was having a bad time, that meant the other one could look after my children, or I could grab something food-wise for Mum or whatever. Mm. It just helped so much.
Yeah. And even if, you know, the kids could sort of pot around to me sometimes, and it didn't really matter if I wasn't feeling great, because I could just... I said, that's fine, I'll just lie on the settee and they can just
watch a puzzle,
play on the telly.
I
often thought, I can't imagine what this would be like if we had even a half an hour drive to get to each other. It would have been so much harder.
And I wonder if talking about it retrospectively, I wonder if us both having it kind of normalised it a bit for them. So maybe it did.
Well, yeah.
Yes. And what about, what's the support been like from the rest of your family?
My husband has been incredible. He's got a business to run, which he does so well at. He's a fantastic dad. I just feel so lucky to have him. He's such a positive person, not in a toxic positive way, but I honestly could not have done it without him.
He's
been incredible. And my dad as well, obviously Mum's husband, he's just lovely as well. And he's so clever. He's just been, they've both been amazing, really incredible. And the kids as well. Done well, kids.
They'll listen to this one day.
Yeah.
And Janet, is it right that you're a school teacher?
Yes.
And have you managed to go back to work?
Oh, yeah. I have. And I've been really open about the diagnosis. And it was really sweet when I was off sick. I had lots of messages from members of my mentor group and kids that I'd taught. And I was regularly in touch with sixth formers. And in fact... I did a sponsored walk last year with some friends, and I thought, oh, I'll put something on the alumni website. And the main thing really was just to get all the young women check in and make sure, and just kind of get a bit of advice out there, but also to publicise the sponsored walk. And back from that, we had so many opportunities to get the word out there because two ex-students are journalists. So one of them works for BBC, so we ended up sharing our story on the BBC, BBC Breakfast and South East Today, and another one works for Metro, and so we had a story on Metro. So right from the start, we knew that our story was we know it's not totally unique because we've met another Scottish mum and daughter, but quite rare and a kind of interest story that might allow us to get talking about it. And that was really, really great. But yeah, school have been brilliant and the kids have been brilliant.
Fantastic. And Fern, is it right that you're training to become an oncology counsellor to support other patients?
Yeah. So my degree is in social work and I went on to have the children, did loads of random things like grew a field of pumpkins, never really knew what I wanted to do until this happened. And I discovered that there's only like two counsellors for everyone with cancer in our area. And I just thought it was so valuable to my well-being. I don't know if you've been lucky enough to, you know, have any sort of therapy, but it just makes the world of difference. So, it's something that I really want to do and I'm really looking forward to doing it. And my gut feeling is that I would like to do some sort of integrated counselling, because I feel that talking therapy is great, but also maybe a little bit of CBT in there as well. Mindfulness, focusing on the now. Breath work, there's so many elements to your well-being that I just think are so beneficial to people who've had breast cancer that I would love to somehow tie it all together and be able to provide something like that for people who need it.
Yes, that sounds like a fantastic way to use your negative experience to give positive experiences to others and help others. So
selfishly as well, I think I'd really enjoy it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's important.
Oh, you'd be really
enjoy it. And Fern, you've also talked about when we think of breast cancer, we talk about feather boas and pink things and coffee mornings, which can sometimes detract from the seriousness of the reality. What have you learned from having breast cancer? And is there anything you change in terms of how we talk about it in the media?
Oh, so much. So much. I think sometimes the media and certain organisations worry too much about scaring people. But the reality is that it is still a really serious, horrible illness that you can't take it lightly. And although we've got a lot of power now to check early and it's so vital that people do, I do think a lot of, as we just said, feather boas and pink cakes and, you know, oh, I did a boob walk or whatever, can make people feel like it's just a bit of fun, but it's not. It's really serious.
It's a really tricky one because you came into this saying that when your mum was diagnosed and you didn't know anything about cancer, you said you've got this and you're super positive. And if I'm right, you got that attitude from everything you've seen in the media, which includes the pink feather boas and the coffee mornings and the boob walks, all of which are really important way to get people involved in sponsorship and raising money for the charities, which is much needed for lots of different endeavours. And we've all seen, you know, comic relief when we see the sad images of the children and, you know, illness and poverty. Those things can make us switch off. And when the messaging is too harsh and too real, it can make us switch off. So where do we find the balance between those things?
I think there's an awful lot of, is it called pink washing?
Yeah.
I think there's an awful lot of that going on where sometimes companies can jump on it as a way of...
I think a lot of those ill-informed ideas and beliefs come from social media as opposed to media as a whole. I think online presences can be quite detrimental because it's people freely giving any opinion, whether it's a load of tosh or not, or you've got so many conspiracy theories about chemo and
HRT.
HRT adds a whole new dimension to what was already a really tricky subject, but that all influences how we see things, whether we realise it or not, clearly influenced what I thought.
Yeah. I don't know where we find the balance between those things, but I think it's a mix of being real and sharing our experiences as you are doing and as we're trying to do with this podcast, but also adding a lighter element as well.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
However we can do that.
Yeah.
So for the question we ask everyone on this podcast, what is the one thing you would like to see change in terms of breast cancer diagnosis, treatment and beyond in the coming years?
I would love to see when women get their smear tests, obviously we get those at a much younger age, I would really love whoever does the smear test to say, have you checked your boobs lately? Because that it's free, it won't cost the NHS anything, it takes seconds, but it brings to the patient that they should be aware of it and that it will dispel any misconceptions that breast cancer only happens to people who are of mammogram age. Mm. I think that's something really simple that could be done that would just bring it to the forefront of younger women's minds.
That's a great idea. So in the cervical smear test that is done at people's GPs, just for the nurse to ask, have you checked her boobs lately?
Yeah.
And maybe a leaflet or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Jan?
Oh, that's really hard. And my mind's
sorry
gone
to put
totally
you on
blank.
The spot.
I think probably when we are talking about it, just to be really explicit in saying to people, it really could happen to you. Mm. You know, because we all hear so many stories or heard so many stories before us that are really heartbreaking. You think, oh, that's awful. You know, like a friend of mine, her daughter was diagnosed just before COVID. She was 30. And I thought that is just absolutely awful. And I couldn't imagine what it was like for my friend for a daughter to be diagnosed. You know, but it didn't once cross my mind that that could be my daughter. I don't know why, to this day, why I didn't think that. But we just aren't used to thinking, really accepting that that could be us.
Mm.
So perhaps much more explicitly, you know, this really could be you.
Yeah.
Make sure that you understand that.
Is there anything you'd like to say to each other after this whole experience and after everything you've learned?
Oh, just I love you. I know you need to stop beating yourself up about stuff because you've been amazing, Mum, and you still are. And I'm so lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you. And well, so I mean, you're amazing. I'm really proud of you. You're incredible.
Oh, God, I've got tears here again. I'm going to have to give you a big, big, big hug, both of you, afterwards. Fern and Jan, thank you so much for joining us on the Breast Cancer Now podcast.
Lovely bunch, thanks.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please also leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend it to someone you think would find it helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them. You can find support and information on our website, breastcancernow.org, and you can follow Breast Cancer Now on social media at Breast Cancer Now. All the links mentioned in this episode are listed in the show notes in your podcast app. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast.